ready to wiggle. We've been ready for so long. Get ready to wiggle. When you wiggle, you can't go wrong. Get ready to wiggle. Wiggle will make you big and strong. Get ready to wiggle. Come on, wiggle to this song. Wiggle to this song.
Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. RBN, it's the left turn of free speech, because, you know, sometimes you gotta wait for the light to change, sometimes you're kind of stuck, but sooner or later it will clear, and you don't want to just dart across and hope for the best. You want to, because you might crash and die. You want to, I don't know where I'm going with this. Anyway, go to republicbroadcasting.org. You'll find a donut button. Click on it. Follow the instructions. Send badly needed fundage. Okay, let's just say that, I don't know, you were going to talk to somebody who was in a position of power. And you only had a certain amount of time, like maybe the length of a radio show, to red pill him to what's going on. What would you do? What would you say? Well, let's just say it was today. Good thing to start off on would be the war in Ukraine. And what would you say? Well, you'd say, hey, the Ukrainians have lost. In fact, the Americans have lost. NATO has lost. They've lost the military war. But you know something? The military war was never even, that was never even the real war. The real war, the military war, the that was just in order to get support for an economic war. And that's also been lost. That's been lost. And, well, what are they going to say to that? They're going to say, well, wait a minute. You say, no, there was never, I mean, winning the military war in Ukraine, having the Ukrainian army beat the Russian army, was never in the cards. And they say, wait a minute, what are you talking about? You say, look, and, you know, they might say, well, look, the Russians, it was just an unprovoked invasion. Well, no. Provoked. I mean, you could say starting with the 2014 coup d'etat, you know, because they might say, oh, they, you know, invaded a sovereign country. Well, no. Was Ukraine a sovereign country? Really? Really? Was it a sovereign country? It just had the coup d'etat in 2014, an American-backed coup d'etat, overthrowing their constitutional order. I mean, you could say overthrowing the democratically elected president, but at this point, I don't even, you know, like, my democracy and everything, our democracy, I'm getting kind of sick of it, frankly. But whatever, constitutional. I mean, if you're a constitutionalist, you can say the constitutional president, the legitimate president. He was the legitimate president. Yanukovych. Of course, if you wanted to, you could go back further. You know, you could go back to the promise of NATO expansion, all sorts of things. But the main thing is that whether you're talking about NATO expansion, whether you're talking about the overthrow of Yanukovych by Victoria Nuland, you know, I went back and I listened to Mark Dankoff and I on the day, I guess was it the day before or the day of, but it hadn't happened yet, just like out, we a show that we recorded, maybe I guess we had recorded it, and so it was broadcast after the invasion, but it was recorded before the invasion, you know, in the 12 hours or so, or the 24 hours, whatever it was, between recording and airing it. The situation had changed. At any rate, though, I went back and listened to that over the weekend, and it stood up very well. You know, one thing Mark Dankoff said, and something that I've heard repeated with direct quotes from Poroshenko, the former president of Ukraine. But Mark Dankoff said this. He said, you know, Poroshenko has said, he has stated that he never had any intention of abiding by the Minsk Accords. The Minsk Accords, which of course are another factor. The Minsk Accords, which was to get Ukraine to stop waging war on these two breakaway provinces, the Russian-speaking, Russian-inhabited provinces, in exchange for them being reincorporated into Ukraine with a degree of autonomy. And Poroshenko has said recently, and he said, in fact, he had said even before this, before the invasion, because Mark Dankoff was quoting it, he had said this, that he never, that the, he agreed to the accords without any intention of implementing them. It was just to buy time. He just wanted to buy time to build up the Ukrainian army. So, I mean, you had just provocation after provocation. Finally, you had, what was the last straw? There were a couple of last straws. One of the last straws was Zelensky, the Jewish president. Poroshenko may have been Jewish, may not have been, I'm not sure. But Zelensky talking about acquiring nuclear weapons. So, you know, you push and you push and you push. With the knowledge, ooh, what was that? Okay, knowing full well that you're going to push and push and push to the limit. You know you're going to cross the red lines. And when I say red lines, I don't mean some irrational thing or some unreasonable line that President Putin has created. But a red line that would be a red line for anybody reasonable. A red line that if you're the leader of a country, and you've got millions, in the case of President Putin, 150 million citizens, and you've got a hostile power, and they're, well, in this case, they were, you know, putting nuclear weapons closer and closer to your border, or right on your border, closer and closer to your major cities. That's it. There is a point where it's unacceptable, and this is what they were doing. Now, of course, the objective isn't to annihilate Russia with nuclear weapons. Like I've said, the objective was to overthrow Vladimir Putin. But then what? But then what? Then bring Russia into the same horrible governance that we're in, into the Jewish tyranny. And that's where they were headed. That's where they had been in the 1990s, to the most tragic results. So they know what this is about. Now, Andrew Anglin had an article up today. I wish I could tell you what it was called. Gosh, I should know. Well, actually, I might even be able to reference it right now in my situation. But, you know, he was making some... He does make good points, and I'd like to give credit where credit is due. That's a different article. It was, I can't even describe my outrage that Merrick Garland and Ben Stiller went to meet Zelensky in the same week. What was such a good point in this article? Honestly, I don't even remember where I was going with this. And he went to a lot of, I think this was the article. But, you know, the thing is, they've done... All right, so I guess his point, one of the points he was making in that article, and in that article, kind of like this program, that article, I think he started writing it and then got distracted. He said he had a Negro home invasion. I don't know if that's true or not. Probably not. Well, if he's in Nigeria, it could be. Who else would be invading his home in Nigeria? But one of the points he was making is that people don't just, there's all this stuff in front of them and they don't understand what's going on. I did learn something in that article. You know, he was introducing the various actors. You know, Ben Stiller. And he had like a little screenshot of a Wikipedia page, born to Jewish parents. You know, Father Jerry Stiller was an actor, comedian, blah, blah, blah. Zelensky, you know, Jewish, born this and that. Merrick Garland, born to Jewish parents. Yeah, I originally thought Merrick Garland was only three-quarters Jewish. I thought that the Garland, his Garland grandfather was a goy. Actually, I think that's what Wikipedia originally was indicating when he was nominated for the Supreme Court back in 2016. But as it turns out, that Garland grandfather had been born, or at least the family name had been Garfinkel, not Garland. So there you go. But then also, you know, he showed the Victoria Nuland page, and I saw something I'd never seen before. Victoria Nuland, yeah, her father was this Jewish doctor of Ukrainian roots. You know, his grandparents had come from Ukraine with a chip on their shoulder. But what shocked me, what completely shocked me, was that Victoria Nuland's mother apparently wasn't Jewish. I never knew that, and I would never have guessed that Victoria Nuland might be half non-Jewish. I'm still not 100% sure, but the Wikipedia article, and I've seen her Wikipedia article over the past dozen years or however long it's been that I've been obsessed with her, because, you know, she's been a big deal for a long time. She was, before she was, I mean, obviously, during the 2014 coup, she was the Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs. Before that, when Hillary Clinton was, that was under Kerry, the Kerry State Department, the Hillary Clinton State Department, she was the spokeswoman. She had a job that Sassy Jansaki later had, but she was the State Department spokesperson, and this was at the time when they had Benghazi, and so she was kind of mixed up in the whole Benghazi disinformation thing. But before that, what was she? Before that, she was the ambassador to NATO. Before that, during the, you know, Iraq war years, she was a foreign policy advisor from the State Department. She was a foreign policy advisor to Dick Cheney. I mean, so she goes back. You go far enough back, and she was like a attaché at the Mongolian embassy in the 1988 or something. Anyway, she goes back. But the idea, I would never in a million years have guessed that she would have a Jewish mother, a non-Jewish mother. And like I say, I'm not 100% convinced yet that she's got a non-Jewish mother, because I've seen her Wikipedia article over and over again, and this is the first time I ever noticed that. But anyway, it was there. But there's one other thing that I guess I never noticed before. She was born on July 1st, 1961. July 1st. You know what July 1st is? You know who else's birthday is July 1st? David Duke. So David Duke and Victoria Nuland share a birthday. Well, happy birthday. It's coming right up, too. It is coming up anytime. But at any rate, the point he was making with all this is, like, this whole war, you just see Jew after Jew after Jew. And he was making the point that not only is practically everybody in Washington going along with this, but the few people who are offering any kind of objection, you know, whether it's like Tucker or Marjorie Taylor Greene, and, you know, I appreciate that they're making some sort of objection. Their objection is like, well, this really isn't our business, and we've got to concentrate on our baby formula shortage, or that type of thing. Which is better than nothing. And it's, you know, I know people in their position, it's hard to do. But, no, this is a Jewish vendetta against Vladimir Putin in particular. You know, Andrew went through a lot of things that, you know, there are other people who will say things. You know, I guess Chomskyites, maybe Chomsky himself. I watched, he's in his 90s now, but I watched Chomsky. And was he saying, you know, what is this? This is like the military-industrial complex. So you have people who say, you know, it's all about selling weapons, which is not. It's a Jewish vendetta. This is what I've been saying all along. And Andrew Anglin, you know, actually, the two of us have been saying very, very similar things on this. So, what else? I mean, other people are making different copes, but he pointed this out, even saying that this is about getting Ukraine in NATO. It's really not about getting Ukraine in NATO. It's not really even about NATO expansion. I mean, NATO it's not going to wind up in NATO, Ukraine. That's not even going to happen. If it did happen, that's not what this is all about. This Ukraine, and Andrew doesn't put it exactly the way I put it, but the way I've been putting it is that Ukraine was just being offered up as a sacrifice, a burnt sacrifice. What's the other word for a burnt sacrifice? Look it up in the dictionary, a burnt sacrifice, a completely burnt sacrifice. It's being offered up as a sacrifice in order to create outrage across the world in order to put a regime, in order to wage economic warfare against Russia. The sanctions are economic warfare, and these are just unprecedented. I mean, we've heard about sanctions against Iran, sanctions against Russia, sanctions against Venezuela or Belarus or whatever. We've been hearing about these things for a while. But these are like unprecedented sanctions where you've had the foreign reserves seized. Now, you did, I guess, 40-something years ago after the Iranian Revolution, you had their foreign reserves seized. So maybe it's not, that might not be completely unprecedented, but Russia's a much bigger and important part of the world economy. Iran was a major oil exporter, but still Russia's a lot more important than Iran was 40 years ago in the wake of the revolution. Russia getting kicked off, kicked out of the SWIFT system, the bank settlements, just all sorts of things, having their private citizens' assets seized. It's just been one after another. And of course, the idea of seizing the assets of these private citizens, of these, well, Jewish billionaires, the idea was to try to get the Jewish billionaires to turn against Putin. But, you know, that hasn't worked. I'm not saying they haven't turned against him, but to the extent they've turned against him, it hasn't made any difference. So you've had this. That was what it was all about. Create a war in Ukraine with all this death and destruction of buildings, and then, you know, pump that out to the TV screens across the world, and you know, get all these outraged netizens, people on the internet, to push their governments or just get the governments, forget about the netizens, one way or the other, doesn't matter. But get them on board with these punishing sanctions to cripple Russia and overthrow Putin and his government. And that was the plan. And it hasn't worked. Salad, okay, we'll yummy, be yummy, right back.
Fruit salad, yummy, yummy. Fruit salad, yummy, yummy.
Yummy, 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 yummy fruit salad.
Let's make some fruit salad today.
Oh, oh, oh,
it's fun to do, it's a healthy way.
Oh, oh, oh,
take all the fruit that you want to eat. It's going to be a fruit salad.
Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com and go to the Valcombe Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1-ounce Valcombe detachable bars, which break into 1/10-ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Just a few waves, and we'll be on our way. You'll see girls and trees, and feel the breeze.
Oh, Neil, feel in that sand, and let the waves touch your knees.
Okay, we're back. I've been talking about, well, what would you tell an important person if you had a 48-minute elevator talk with them? This show is 48 minutes, so we'll just say 48 minutes. What would you tell them? And so, you know, I just said before the break, you know, echoing partly, you know, to a large extent what Andrew Anglin says, you know, it's not just that it's not our business and we should be concentrating on baby formula. It's not for the arms sales. It's not, you know, all about the Benjamin's baby. It's not even about NATO expansion, really. NATO expansion was just a means of pushing and pushing and pushing and finally provoking Russia to a response. The whole idea was to get a war going in order to inflame international opinion and get punishing sanctions that would bring down Putin and his government. And it hasn't worked. Well, here's the thing. It hasn't worked. We're 4 months into it. It hasn't worked. The Russians are going to, not only are they going to meet their military objectives, their economy hasn't collapsed. And meanwhile, the economies in Europe are doing horribly. Western Europe, NATO Europe, EU Europe. The economy in the United States is doing really badly. along with all this other stuff that we're going through at the same time. Still convulsions from COVID. Still, massive black crime wave. Still, the promotion of homosexuality and trannyism. Still all these things. I'm sure I'm missing a lot of stuff, too. And yet Russia's doing fine. There's going to be a hiccup in their economy, but that's about it. China's doing fine. The Africans and some third world countries are hurting, but they're hurting because of the war that this was not a war of choice for Russia. It wasn't. This was a war of choice for the Zionist West. And the Africans aren't going along with this. Not that the Africans have a whole lot of say in things, but for whatever reason, for various reasons that you probably know, they're the poster child for people who want to be altruistic, and so they get a certain amount of sympathy. Yeah, there's going to be massive starvation in Africa because of this. Because of the interrupted food production and distribution. So it hasn't worked. And what you're going to be seeing very, very soon is Boris Johnson, he'll probably lose his job. I've been saying, and I'm convinced, maybe I'm going to be wrong, but I'm convinced that Zelensky is going to be overthrown by generals before long. And, of course, we're going to have... in 4.5 months, we've got our midterm elections, and the Democrats are going to be decimated in the House of Representatives. We're going to have all this stuff. I think Italy's got elections coming up. So there's going to be a lot going on. And getting back to Andrew Anglin's article, at what point do the Goyim finally say, well, look, this is a Jewish war? This is all about Jewish power. It's not about the Benjamins. It's not about NATO expansion. It's not about baby formula. This is a Jewish thing. It's a big Jewish scheme. Especially when you're in the middle of all these other big Jewish schemes. Now, in the next segment after this break, I think I want to go into... I talk about Jewish schemes, and the thing is, I don't feel hostility towards Jews, but we've got to overthrow this Jewish power. And what does that look like? Does that look like throwing Jews into fake shower rooms and masturbation machines? No, it doesn't. And this is one thing we've got to learn. We've got to learn a way to talk in not so that we don't scare Jews, but so that we don't scare our own people who we need, who have been, they've watched all the same Holocaust movies, Nazi movies. They've been indoctrinated with the same stuff that has helped keep Jewish paranoia, going full-blown. Well, these Goyim have been watching the same stuff, and, it's very, very easy to trigger our own white people into thinking that discussion of Jewish power or, some sort of anti-Semitism is going to lead to fake shower rooms and masturbation machines. And they won't go along with it. So we've got to be careful about how we phrase things. Make sure that we're able to talk in such a way that doesn't seem to be threatening violence, but still is getting at the point. Because if we seem to be threatening violence... Because violence isn't going to work, but if we seem to be threatening violence, we're not going to get our own people on board.
Hot potato, hot potato. Hot potato, hot potato. Hot potato, hot potato. Potato, 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 potato. Don't spaghetti, don't spaghetti. Don't spaghetti, don't spaghetti. Don't spaghetti, don't spaghetti. Spaghetti, 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 spaghetti.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's one, RAD, consistent results when used for heart problems. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious that if he hadn't made it to the hospital in time, he would have died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives, he tried Extendivite. While taking Extendivite, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our fifth bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
Chug a big red car. We'll travel near and we'll travel far. Toot, toot, chug a big red car. We're gonna ride the whole day long.
Okay, so we're back. So I have actually been writing a book. I'm kind of finishing it up. Hopefully it will be published before long. Hopefully later this year. And here's a little excerpt from it that's relevant to the discussion today. Is it too late? No. Let's start with this paragraph. The point that I have been trying to make is that Jewish power is dependent on the repression of the discussion of Jewish power. This is actually a step farther than Gilan Atzmon's adage that the essence of Jewish power is the ability to repress the discussion of Jewish power. The fact is that an awful lot of Jewish power would simply evaporate if it could be discussed. Jews don't have guns pointed at our heads. Jewish media power in particular would dissolve the moment people understand that Jews with an anti-white agenda run the media. The ability of Jewish money to capture politicians would dissolve the moment people understood that kosher-certified politicians can never represent the interests of the people. Jewish money won't immediately dissolve, but much of Jewish financial power comes from their management of other people's money. BlackRock has attracted much attention in recent years. But the mainstay of their business are exchange-traded funds, ETFs, which passively track indices such as the S&P 500. Non-Jewish competitor financial institutions offer equivalent ETFs passively tracking most of the same indices, and a concerted effort to disinvest from BlackRock could be extremely successful and pose no financial risk to the people who chose to disinvest. At some level, Jews must realize how precarious their power is, which is part of the reason that they are so incredibly sensitive and resistant to any criticism of Jews as anything other than individuals, and even then, as individuals not specifically described as Jewish. I use the term at some level because I think for most Jews it is more of a gut feeling rather than something they are actually conscious of. But there are no doubt some Jewish intellectuals who have gone through the same intellectual process that I am laying out here. But in general, I don't think there is any center that sends out some sort of a memo to Jews about the precariousness of Jewish power. Rather, I think that typical Jews, just like the rest of us, are bombarded with Schindler's List and fake hate crimes and incessant Nazi imagery, and conclude that another Holocaust is just around the corner unless vigilance is constantly maintained. Likewise with other Jewish priorities, whether they be support for mass immigration, hostility towards Putin, or alarm at Trumpism, rather than receiving explicit directives through their synagogues or whatever, they get cues from elite Jews they see in the media, whether it's Chuck Schumer, a New York Times editorialist, a university professor, or an official with the SPLC. So really, all we need to do is break the taboo on talking about Jewish power. Obviously, this is easier said than done. Pitfalls we need to avoid are sounding potentially violent and providing inaccurate information, both of which wind up discrediting us. And once we have lost credibility, it is extremely difficult to regain it. Let's examine these two pitfalls separately. Because Jews are so thoroughly brainwashed with the idea that the Goyim are always on the verge of a pogrom or a Holocaust, convincing the Jews that a discussion of Jewish power will not lead to violence is not easy, especially since many of them know deep down inside that Jewish policies have been massively detrimental to whites. However, it is not really Jews that need convincing. It is white people. The very white people that we need to convince to get on board with the discussion of Jewish power have also been subjected to Schindler's List brainwashing. Many have Jewish friends that they do not want to throw into fake showers. White Christians need to understand that Jews, with the exception of some very unsympathetic characters, don't actually have much to fear from whites regaining control of our countries, besides losing certain privileges that they should not be entitled to in the first place. If whites can be convinced that Jewish rule is detrimental to them, but that rule can be cast off without violence, plenty will be ready to join. Even more will be willing to oppose Jewish power if they become convinced that it is also detrimental to the rest of the world. Like it or not, altruism has been ingrained so deeply into whites, and not just liberals, that an appeal to racial interests alone will often not be sufficient. Okay, so that is what I was writing earlier today. Now, that paragraph was dealing with the one pitfall. I said, you know, one pitfall is that we need to avoid sounding potentially violent. The other was providing inaccurate information, and this is also something of a pet peeve. I was talking to somebody recently, an important person that I'm trying to convince, and that I am convincing, about Rahm Emanuel. And Rahm Emanuel, I was asked about Rahm Emanuel, and I said, you know, Rahm Emanuel actually is a dual citizen. I said, when people say that Jews are dual citizens of Israel, usually they're not. You know, people will talk about, they'll just name a bunch of names. I heard one rather popular analyst, who I'm not going to say her name, but, she was not stating as a fact, but repeating information that she thought was credible, that, you know, a big hunk of the U.S. Congress are actually dual citizens. And there, you know, there are two problems with that. One, that is the pitfall, is no, they're not, okay? Just because somebody's Jewish doesn't make them a dual citizen of Israel. Being Jewish entitles you to citizenship, but you have to apply for it. You have to apply for it. And in fact, you don't have to be Jewish, halakhically Jewish, to apply for Israeli citizenship. All you need is one Jewish grandparent, one grandparent that you can document is Jewish. Now, let's just say that's your father's father. Well, you could get Israeli citizenship if you applied for it under the law of return. However, you wouldn't be considered a Jew. You could go to Israel and live as a non-Jew. You would not be allowed to marry a Jew. But you could do that. And, I'm sure there are people who do that. But, okay, why is Rahm Emanuel? So what I'm saying is, like, the dozens of Jews in the U.S. Congress, they're not all dual citizens. Which ones are? You wouldn't know. The only way to know would be to know which ones have taken the proactive step of applying for Israeli citizenship. And I don't think many have done that. You know, if you have a grandparent who was born in Ireland, they'd have to be born in Ireland. They can't just be Irish, but they have to be born in Ireland. A grandparent born in Ireland, you can get Irish citizenship. Now, the Slattery's came over a few generations earlier than that, so no, I don't have any grandparents born in Ireland. And it's something similar with Italian. If you have a grandfather, I'm not exactly sure what it is, because it's not relevant to me, but the Irish thing was relevant to me, and no, I wouldn't have qualified for Irish citizenship. My parents wouldn't have qualified for Irish citizenship because our ancestors came over. The Irish ancestors came over too early, and of course the English ancestors came over a lot earlier than that. At any rate, what about Rahm Emanuel? Well, the thing about Rahm Emanuel, it's not just that he's Jewish. It's that his father was Israeli. His father was Israeli. He fought in the, I believe it was the Irgun. Maybe it was the Haganah or the Stern Gang, but I'm pretty sure it was the Irgun he was in. It was a terrorist militia that was fighting for Israeli independence. I think it was the Irgun. I think that's the one that Menachem Begin was leading. And so we know that his father was Israeli. Well, here's something else we know. If you have an Israeli parent, you don't need to apply for Israeli citizenship. It's automatic. Now, the thing is, though, to get an Israeli passport, you still have to apply for it. And if you are entitled to this automatic citizenship and you go to Israel, right, if you're an Israeli citizen and you go to Israel, you need to enter Israel with an Israeli passport. Now, Rahm Emanuel, we know he went to Israel because he worked for the Israeli military during the Gulf War. So he was in Israel. He's automatically entitled to Israeli citizenship. It meant he had to go. He had to enter Israel with an Israeli passport. So in his case, we know he's a dual citizen. Michael Chertoff, I'm pretty sure he's been to Israel. It's hard to imagine he never was in Israel. But Michael Chertoff, the former Homeland Security Secretary, his mother was a famous Israeli. She was in the Mossad, and she was the first stewardess for El Al Airlines. So he was automatically, because his mother is Israeli, he's automatically Israeli. So there are some, but in general, when people say that somebody's a dual citizen, they're just guessing. They don't know. And when you go and say that, like, dozens of members of Congress are dual citizens just because they're Jewish, you don't have the evidence. Like, there's a few specific cases where maybe you do, but no. And it diminishes, and it does two things. A, it diminishes your credibility if you go around saying that a Jew is a dual citizen. But the other thing is, what's the fixation on dual citizenship? What's the fixation on, frankly, what's the fixation on Israel? Is it okay? Would it be okay if, Chuck Schumer is flooding our, Chuck Schumer, he sponsored the immigration lottery. That was his legislation. Is it okay that, would it be okay if Chuck Schumer was starting a whole bunch of chain migration through letting in literally random people through a lottery? Would it be any better if he did that as a non-dual citizen, as only an American citizen? What difference does it make if he was a dual citizen or not? It's not necessarily that his loyalty is to Israel rather than America. His loyalty is clearly to Jews, not to Israel. And that's, you always hear people say, their loyalty is to Israel. Is it? I don't think it's to Israel. I think it's to Jews. Israel's a dual, is the Jewish state. And so a lot of them have maybe the dual loyalty, but it's not so much a dual loyalty. It is an overriding loyalty they have to their tribe. And it's not to Israel, although Israel's very important to them, but the loyalty is to their tribe, to their people, in general. I'm not saying all of them, but I think that's very strong. So we need to be accurate. And if you start saying things that aren't true, can't be proven to be true, you lose your credibility. And, a lot of the time people are trying to make points that don't even need to be made. Like, I was saying, doesn't need to be made. The point that they are Israeli citizens when they're not necessarily, it's not a point that needs to be made. Oh, here's another pet peeve, is when I hear people say that everybody they don't like is a Jew. Right? Anybody who they don't like is a Jew, or anybody, whatever. So I've heard people say President Johnson was a Jew, Lyndon Baines Johnson was a Jew, or, the Bushes are Jews, or saying all these people are Jews. Okay, so you don't like them. there's no good evidence that there, like, obviously there are people who have tried to hide their Jewish ancestry. Madeleine Albright, of all people, I mean, I don't know what she thought she, I mean, it reminds me of, like, some giant person hiding behind a fern and thinking that people can't see them. I mean, she was pretty obviously Jewish, but you know, if you're going to go around saying that all these people are Jews when they're not, or at least when you can't prove it, you lose your credibility. What good is that? Okay, I'll be right back.
Captain Feathersong fell asleep on his pirate ship. Then he woke up on a farm.
Oh, my goodness me!
With roosters and ducks singing this song.
Quack, 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 cock-a-doodle-doo. Quack, 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 cock-a-doodle-doo. Quack, quack, quack-a-doodle-doo.
Hi, Tom Bolton for EaseOff. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC. 417-932-6419.
I have an idea to fix almost all of the problems with our federal government. I'm Peter Serafine with today's Liberty Minute. Okay, it's not my idea. It's a bill sitting in the House that will probably never get a vote. H.R. 46, the One Bill, One Topic Transparency Act. If every bill in the House could only deal with one subject, then Congress couldn't add unrelated amendments. Pork and earmark would become nearly impossible. Every bill would have to stand on its own merits. No more bad laws tacked onto spending bills. Corruption would become more difficult. Waste would become more obvious. We would get the transparency from Congress that we deserve. H.R. 46, One Bill, One Subject Transparency Act, would be the greatest legislative win for we the people since the U.S. Constitution. Read H.R. 46 and sign a petition of support at liberty-lighthouse.com/HR46. Until tomorrow, Sivis Pashem, Parabellum.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of Happy Packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Wags the dog.
He likes to tango.
Wags the dog. The dog.
All right, back. You know, I am compulsively checking the news now because I am just convinced that at any moment Vladimir Zelensky is going to get overthrown by his generals. You know, I tell this to people and they just say, sorry, mate, I don't see it happening, or whatever it is they say in whatever unusual accent they have. But... You know, this has led me to checking the news frequently. Now, typically, where would I look? Well, most trusted name in news, of course, is the Daily Stormer, but they only, you know, update it during, I guess, what would be the nighttime in Eastern Standard Zone or whatever. So sometimes I'll look at Reuters sometimes to see if Zelensky's been overthrown yet, or right now I'm looking at AP. And, you know, and you look at these sites, and they used to be news sites, and of course now they're really bad. I mean, Yahoo News is the worst. It's like clickbait. So they had a headline from earlier today. It said, "You'll never believe what lie Vladimir Putin is telling now." I mean, but wasn't Katie Couric, didn't she leave CBS News to be the director of news for Yahoo? So there you go. Headline, AP, I haven't read the article. Supreme Court expands gun rights, striking New York limits. Now, that might be interesting to look at, but the thing is, before you look at the article, you've got the picture there. And so the picture, going along with this article, is of very dark-skinned, and I'm pretty sure female, black hands holding a pistol of some sort. I don't know what it is. If it's a Glock, I don't know these things. But, you know, that's... Why that? Okay, yeah, gun rights. Yeah, that's what we want, is more black women walking around with guns, I guess. I don't know. I'm not going to read this article. Actually, I'm going to pause it and glance at it. Well, actually, it's kind of interesting. It says, in a major expansion of gun rights, the Supreme Court said Thursday that Americans have a right to carry firearms in public for self-defense. The decision follows recent mass shootings and is expected to ultimately allow more people to legally carry guns on the streets of the nation's largest cities, including New York, Los Angeles, and Boston, and elsewhere. About a quarter of the U.S. population live in states expected to be affected by the ruling, which struck down a New York gun law. The decision, the High Court's first major gun decision in more than a decade, was 6-3. You can guess who was voting what way. With the court's conservatives in the majority and the liberals in dissent. The ruling comes as Congress is working toward passage of gun legislation following mass shootings in Texas, New York, and California. On Thursday, senators were expected to clear the way for that measure, modest in scope, but still the most far-reaching in decades. Well, I wonder if that might get struck down. Here's the thing about the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court proved completely useless regarding the corona apocalypse. I guess did they just clear the, was it the Supreme Court or was it a lower court that finally struck down the mask mandate on airplanes? But you know, they were useless on that. They were worse than useless on the fake election. But I think in abortion, which isn't my issue, as you all know, probably perhaps they may well strike down Roe versus Wade, which, you know, I guess judicially it was a bad decision. And then guns, actually, I expect the Supreme Court to uphold gun rights reasonably well, but what do I know? Anyway, thanks for joining me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode.
Ladies and gentlemen, residents of the planet Rockstar, please welcome on stage King Mondo, the Wiggles, and Captain Feathersaw.
Now listen!
We're listening!
Oh, we're stepping out!
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
RBN.
John Stadtmiller's Republic Broadcasting Network. Republicbroadcasting.org.